Good morning. Happy New Year. As we heard from Lily, the new year has brought some of what the old year brings as well, which is loss and love and beauty with it as well. And so we hold in our hearts those that we will be signing cards for later in the morning. As we gather today, we're gathering to begin a month of exploring stillness. What it means to just be rather than do. And so this morning, as we begin this exploration, I'm going to invite one of our experts at stillness, Judy Gaylord, to come forward and light our chalice flame. Judy tells me that she has been a longtime practitioner of meditation and feels that without those moments of calm and stillness, she would find it very difficult to be the activist that she is. For in order to be and do in the world, we at times need to pause, reflect, and see what it is within us that draws us forward and onward. So may this flame be still with us this morning, reminding us of the spark of life within us that we sometimes see most clearly when we are still. Oh, it is so good to see all of you. My friend Natty is here. I see Katrin brought her two buddies that I met before a while ago. It's good to see you guys again. And I see my buddy Kiana is back. Happy New Year. And your little sister, too. It's so good to see you guys. Well, this morning, the whole church is talking about stillness, and you guys are going to get to be experts in stillness at the Children's Chapel, because once a month now, this is probably something good to tell everybody in the church, once a month now, we're having a special worship service that the kids get to do. They get to join us in worship for just the first 15 minutes, but once a month, they're going to have their own worship service that their parents are invited to come to if they want to, but it's really for the kids. So they're going to explore stillness a little bit with Reverend Melora a little bit later. But I thought I would tell you a little stillness story before you leave. And it's a story about the one thing, I think it's probably the one thing that I miss about snow. Because if I really loved snow, would I have moved to Victoria? Probably not, right? I would probably move to Calgary. This is good. I probably would have. But where I lived before I came to Victoria, in fact, the winter before I moved to Victoria, we had huge snow. Not only did we have snow, but we had snow, and then we had snow on top of our snow, and then we had another snowfall that was on top of that snow. It was like feet and feet and feet of snow. It was hard to get out our front door. There was so much snow. And what I realized that I really love about snow is when there's that much snow, there's kind of nothing you can do. Well, you can. He's going to tell me you can do angels, and you can kind of do a little of this, and you make a little of this. You can do all kinds of stuff. But here's where I'm going with this story before you guys completely undermine my story. What's great is everything slows down. Because where we lived, they were not very good at handling snow, so it took a really long time for the plow to come around, and it took a really long time for people to dig their cars out. So most everybody, not just the kids, because the schools were closed, but the grown-ups got snow days too. Everybody had to just stay home and talk to each other and not get on their computers and not watch TV and just talk and be. And that is something that I really love about what snow does. It makes us stop sometimes. And so really, this month at church is about what can we do in our own lives, especially since we don't really have snow very often in Victoria. I'm a little holding out a little hope for a little bit of snow this year because it's been so cold. But, you know, people are not shaking their heads like, no! But we need things that are like snow in our own lives without any snow. Have you ever seen something on maybe your VCR, but nobody has a VCR anymore. Maybe on your device, sometimes when you're watching something, you push play, but then there's also a button, it's usually the same button, that's pause. We need pause buttons in our lives. So I'm hoping that this month of stillness, you and your family, you and your parents will talk about where are our pause buttons. Maybe you'll even make a little pause button to put somewhere in your house so that when you're feeling like you're crazy, like a soccer practice and this and that and the other thing, you can just run over to the button and be like, Mom, Dad, brother, sister, I need a pause. And you can push the button. Like the hole in your sock. Sometimes you just need to pause. Okay, I think we've done as much as we can do. So all you can do is try to get out of the snow and then fall down again. So let's pause for a moment and have our moment of prayer before you guys head out to your class and then your chapel service. Spirit of life, we give thanks for the moments when we get to just be. When we get to enjoy a beautiful day, when we get to smile, when we get to laugh, when we don't worry about what's next on our schedule, and we get to just rest in the moment that is. For all of those pause button moments and all the people and all of the beauty that share them with us, we give thanks on this precious day. So may it be. And amen. As we begin our time of meditation and prayer, I have two more people to lift into the loving embrace of this community, in addition to those for whom we're signing cards today. Invite your prayers this morning for Leslie Gillette, who is not with us here this morning because her son is hospitalized in Peru. He's in serious condition after experiencing some altitude sickness hiking there, and so she had to fly to Lima on Tuesday of this week. So I invite your prayers for Leslie and her son. Also, got a beautiful and moving email that I want to share a few lines with you about the death of Marvin Evans. On Friday night, January 8th, colleague and first minister of this congregation, first full-time settled minister you had here, served this congregation from 1963 to 1967. Marvin Evans died, as he wanted to, peacefully at home. He had celebrated his 90th birthday, seen at least some of the last season of Downton Abbey, spoken loving words to all who needed to hear them, and then gently let go. And so we want to hold our memories, those of you who know of Marvin's ministry or knew Marvin, I want to hold his memory up for prayer this morning. He was so gracious towards Melora and myself, sending us little notes occasionally, and so I want to lift Marvin into your care this morning as well. Let us gather in some moments of stillness here. Breathing in this life that we still have. Breathing out the love and gratitude we feel for all who have shaped our lives, who have reminded us to put love and connection first. And in this silence, as we start this new year, I invite you now to lift the names, either spoken or simply hold them in the silent sanctuary of your heart, people that you have brought with you into this sacred space. For all those lives that we carry with us, for the wonderful sound of gurgling children, for those last breaths and final loving words spoken, for this remarkable journey called life. We lift our hearts and give our thanks. So may it be. And amen.
Stillness, the practice of dwelling in open moments. I was first exposed to this idea after Emma was born. I have had a gazillion opportunities to continue this practice since then. Over the years, I have often dwelt in the open moments in a deep, rich, and delicious way. Now, I find that it's harder to do, and yet delightfully familiar too. It's all about living in the moment, fully present to all that is my life in this moment. There is a place and space for this practice in my daily life. Often, my life goes like this. I have a vision. There is an overview plan and time spent with my calendar. Also, along this timeline, I take copious notes of every possible detail. Then there are a multitude of communications. During all of this time, I'm collecting and organizing. The final preparation is repeated deep breathing and relaxing my shoulders. Then the stillness comes while I look and while I see. This stillness connects me to myself and to you as I be and do each moment. The stillness can be as brief as the pause that is created by a comma on a page. Stillness is the practice of dwelling in open moments.
I'm a sucker for those Brian Tate pieces, man. Get me every time. Reminds me of the famous quotation from St. Francis that says you should pray constantly, pray, never ceasing to pray, and when necessary, use words. This morning's reading is from my new favorite spiritual writer and teacher. I quoted him to you several weeks ago, Ahmed Safi, who writes for the blog On Being. This is part of the essay that Reverend Melora posted to our church's Facebook page, an essay of his entitled, The Disease of Being Busy. How did we end up living like this? Why do we do this to ourselves? Why do we do this to our children? When did we forget that we are human beings, not human doings? Whatever happened to a world in which kids get muddy, get dirty, get messy, and heavens, get bored? Do we have to love our children so much that we overschedule them, making them stressed and busy just like us? What happened to a world in which we can sit with the people we love so much and have slow conversations about the state of our heart and soul? Conversations that slowly unfold. Conversations with pregnant pauses and silences that we are in no rush to fill. How did we create a world in which we have more and more and more to do with less time for leisure, less time for reflection, less time for community, less time to just be? This disease of being busy, and let's call it what it is, the disease of being busy when we are never at ease, is spiritually destructive to our health and well-being. It saps our ability to be fully present with those we love the most and keeps us from forming the kind of community that we all so desperately crave. In many Muslim cultures, when you want to ask someone how they're doing, you ask in Arabic, "Kayf hal ik?" Or in Persian, "Hal I shoma chetora?" How is your hal? What is this hal that you inquire about? It is the transient state of one's heart. In reality, we ask, how is your heart doing at this very moment, at this breath? When I ask, how are you? That is really what I want to know. I am not asking how many items are on your to-do list, nor asking how many items are in your inbox. I want to know how your heart is doing at this very moment. Tell me. Tell me your heart is joyous. Tell me your heart is aching. Tell me your heart is sad. Tell me your heart craves a human touch. Examine your own heart. Explore your soul, and then tell me something about your heart and your soul. My message this morning is entitled Stillness as Antidote. And you could say that this morning's message is the first in a ministerial trilogy on stillness. Today, I'm going to address why stillness is an antidote to much of what is broken and dysfunctional in our culture today. Next Sunday, Reverend Melora is going to have us actually practice stillness. So she's not just going to talk about it, we're actually going to do it next week. In 2 weeks, then, I will come back and complete the trilogy with a bit more deep look at what stillness gives us, what stillness helps us to uncover. And then at the very end of the month, Worship Associate Dan Klimke on the 31st will look at stillness throughout some of the world's religious traditions. So I guess you Star Wars fans could say that the ministerial trilogy today would be episode one, The Return of Sanity. About 8 years ago, I was leading a retreat with 20 members of the congregation I served at that time. I came to realize that leading retreats is one of my favorite things to do in ministry. Makes me think I ought to lead one here, huh? So anyway, we had arrived at a retreat center outside of our busy and hectic city, outside of our busy and hectic lives, to try for just a weekend to cultivate our spiritual lives and selves. We arrived, we unpacked at least some of our baggage in our rooms, we met for dinner in the dining hall, and then we gathered for an opening time of worship and of introductions. A little bit of conversation about why we had come and what we hoped for. At the close of that opening evening, I will never forget that a few of us sort of lingered talking for a bit. And then as we all started to disperse and head off to our individual rooms, I noticed one young woman sort of lingering, a little reluctant to leave. And I remember I started talking with her a bit, and after a while, it became clear that she was talking with me because she didn't actually want to leave. And as we were talking for a little while longer, I sort of looked at her and I was like, you want to tell me why we're really talking about movies and what we ate for dinner? And she finally said, I'm a little... I'm a little reluctant to go back to my room because there's only going to be me there. And I don't know what I'm going to find. I'm not sure I know who I am. I'm not sure I'm comfortable just being with me. No internet, no TV, no distractions. Just me. And I think I said something to her like, well, maybe you'll have to reintroduce yourself. Remember again who it is that you are when you're not doing and going and always functioning at a high level. So she was reluctant, but she eventually left for her room. And we all began the task of looking again at who we were when we were in stillness and when we had nothing to distract us from our relationship with that soul that we sung about earlier. And I've realized since that retreat 8 years ago that I can't tell you how many times in recent months and years I have heard people speak in such a way about discomfort with themselves. And not only that, but realized how much they put stock in what they do as being the source of their success, or the source of their self-understanding. Not only that, the source of their self-worth. How many people have you talked to and you realize that they feel like their whole sense of self-worth, their whole sense of why they're in the world, their whole sense of whether or not they're a good person is all wrapped up in what they do and how much they accomplish professionally? Our very sense of who we are, the value that we have in the world, seems to be somehow directly linked to what we have done, to what our resume looks like, or what we can check off as things that we have accomplished. We are what we do. And apparently, the busier we are, the more full our lives, the more completely booked our calendars are, the better people we are. It's almost like it's a badge of courage now to be able to show somebody else, look, no, I'm busier than you are. My calendar is even more packed than yours. It's like our character, a mark of character to say, I am so busy, I can't even see straight. I don't even know where I'm going or what I'm doing. I've lost track of what is important. It sounds so foolish when I say it like that, doesn't it? And yet, we seem to have bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. We've accepted it as sort of gospel truth, this short-sighted, ultimately dangerous equation that we've created. This equation that we are what we do. Busy and fast is good. It's what good people do. And slow with moments of stillness is bad. It's what lazy and bad people do, or rather, don't do. And yet, if we move at a constant breakneck pace, great word, isn't it? Breakneck pace. Fitting term, what is lost? There is no time, no room for reflection and assessment. How do I even know if I'm doing a good job if all I'm doing is going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next? Do I even know why I am doing what I'm doing? Do I remember why I committed some of my time and energy to these things in the first place? How present and personally invested am I in all of these tasks that I am undertaking? Am I bringing my whole self to all of these doings? And am I bringing whatever it is that I uniquely have to contribute to the table of my life? I think stillness gets a bad rap. I really do. Because stillness is so deceptive. When you see someone being still, right, from the outside, a person being still is pretty unremarkable, right? There they are, sitting on a bench at the park, sitting on a meditation cushion, in a yoga pose, hanging out at a coffee shop. Looks like a whole bunch of nothing. They're not accomplishing a darn thing. They ought to get up and do something. It appears from the outside like nothing is happening. But you know what? I think nothing could be further from the truth. Most of the time, if you go over to that person after their moment of stillness and you ask them what was going on, what was happening inside of them, you will usually get a pretty profound answer. Maybe the best answer they'll have all day, all week, all month, all year. Often, in their quiet stillness, something is happening beneath the surface. Something is unfolding. Or for you plant lovers, something is germinating inside of them. Some aspect of life or some question that has been puzzling them forever is being seen anew. Some event is being placed in its proper perspective. Perhaps a grudge is being at long last let go of, or an appreciation of someone dear is being honored and fully held. Maybe a new resolve to try to get away from bad habits is forming. Maybe a new approach to an old dilemma. It's hard to say what's happening. But I can tell you this for a fact, stillness is not inaction. Stillness is foundational. Stillness is where we lay the groundwork for being. If we don't lay that foundation that we lay when we are still, everything else that we do just feels so surface. I once read a Christian writer say that the whole purpose of prayer, the whole purpose of practicing prayer is not that it gets something to happen in the world. It's not that it changes other things. It's that it changes us. And part of the way she described that is she said, no matter what's happening, sediment is being laid. Like you're laying some foundational groundwork that you can build the house of your life upon. And when that earthquake comes, like it did recently, right? When that earthquake comes in your life, when that loss happens, when that diagnosis occurs, when someone you love calls and tells you that they are dying, you are going to be so happy that you had those moments of stillness, that you laid that foundation. Because your life might not crumble the way it would have otherwise. That's why it drives me bonkers when people say stillness doesn't, it's just a waste of time, man. You're just sitting there doing nothing. No, without the stillness, without the meditation, without the prayer, without whatever word you want to give it, so much seems so fragile, so tenuous, so without substance. So I think this stillness stuff is so important because here we live in this culture that is moving constantly and that is so loud. You ever get that feeling? You're just like, shut up! I can't even hear what I think about what I think. And I was on a retreat and this nun got up to read from a book and she said, I'm now going to read from the book Raw Faith. And she said, we will have to be still and listen closely for a God who refuses to shout in a world that is so loud. That rocked my world. Whether or not you believe in God is not the point that I'm making here. If you are going to listen for that kernel of truth, that still small voice of wisdom within you, that understanding of what is important, whatever name you want to give it, you will have to be still and quiet because it will not shout. It will refuse to shout in a world that is loud, and so you will have to get quiet and still, and maybe, just maybe, you'll catch a little glimpse out of the corner of your eye of that essential something made you get out of bed. The God who refuses to shout. I said, amen, sister. Friends, we need a break every day. We need that pause button I talk to the kids about. We need, I'm going to go, I love Spain. We need a spiritual siesta. We need intentional, deliberate, chosen breaks. If we're ever going to see things, if we're ever going to perceive things, if we're ever going to understand things more deeply. Ultimately, I think that this matters perhaps more than we can possibly know. Not for fuzzy spiritual reasons, but for reasons that living in our, that will have a real impact on how we live in our world. It seems to me we wrestle with two main ways of being in the world, neither of which is grounded in a contemplative or spiritual approach to being. One of the things that drove me to ministry in the first place, I wanted this like spiritual contemplative life, and then I got into the parish and what am I doing? I'm running, run. So you guys got to remind me to push the pause button occasionally too, right? We have people in the world that it seems to me are in one camp, either people who are so alienated, so disenchanted, so angry, so depressed, so despairing, because they so bought into this sense that their worth and their value is only a strict utilitarian kind of thing. I am what money I make, what role I fill, what I earn. And if I'm in that kind of mode of being, then it's going to be hard for me to see my life, or anybody else's life for that matter, as having any kind of meaning or value or purpose. And then we have people, talking about you, Mr. Trump. We have people, Mr. Harper, people who are so convinced and so convicted about their understanding and their perspective on the world that they have lost the ability to see any other point of view. There is no other way to be. Compassion and empathy and humility have all fallen by the wayside. And this happens, I mentioned some people on that one end of the political spectrum, but let's be honest, this happens all across the political spectrum. And it's part of what eats away at our ability to have any kind of real or true discourse, nonetheless action, on any of the major issues that face our world, moving us forward toward anything that would help the common good. How different would our discourse be as a society if everybody was forced to pause before they spoke? Can you imagine? Can you imagine the House of Commons if it was like, sorry, 2-minute pause before anybody can say anything else? You have to really have heard what the person said before you can say anything. You would have to really prove that you had heard what had been said before you could speak. That alone would make a huge difference. You can't just interject. You can't just listen to feel and hear when your next point is coming up. You actually have to listen to hear and to understand what someone else thinks. And this is where stillness and spirit might yet set us free. Because I don't think we can become or be the people that we want to be in the world without stillness. Without some stillness and reflection, how can I even discern what it is that I believe? How can I figure out how to act in the world in a way that reflects and mirrors my values if I'm not still? If we are all movement and talk and no stillness and its great companion listening, then how will we ever hear? The longer I live in this world, the more I realize how little I know. And therefore, the more I realize how much I need other people. Not just as companions on the journey, although I certainly need that. But I need other people as corrective forces in my life also. I notice that every time I feel myself moving into that know-it-all kind of place, and that was always the student that drove me the craziest when I was in school, right? The kid in class who was the know-it-all, who had the answer to everything. Every time I feel myself moving into that know-it-all place, tempted to believe that I have it all right, or if I feel myself getting a little bit chippy, my hackles up, like I'm getting more and more defensive in my posture and in my outlook, that's like this big warning light going off for me that says, it's time to be still. It's time to shut up. It's time to listen for the God who refuses to shout. Because, friends, my self-righteousness rarely survives my times of stillness. My convictions may emerge stronger or my resolve more firm, but I also notice a companion that comes along with it, which is that I usually am more open to growth and to learning, more open to the understanding that there is much more I still need to do, to grow, to understand. And that's why one of my deepest prayers whenever I am in stillness is that I might never consider myself done. Because it is the still places that often take me both to the heart of what is dear to me and to the edges of my comprehension, my understanding, my love. So may we be still. May we be quiet so that we hear the voices and lives of others speaking to us. May we be still so that we can see what is most precious in this fleeting life of ours. May we be still, so that we might live lives of deep integrity and meaning while we can, for the betterment of the common good and the fulfillment of our days. Blessed be, and amen. May the stillness, the silence, the essence, the spirit carry you and give you power this day and every day.